Good morning. I'll tell you two things I'm tired of. Sickness. We caught something else this week. I don't know what it is, but me and Sarah are sick, and thankfully Elijah hasn't gotten it. But it might just be allergies. I don't know. There's been a lot of Benadryl in my body. So not this morning, though, so I'm wide awake. Other thing I'm tired of is storms on Sunday morning. I don't think I've had to – this is twice now, and it's happened three times that we've had to, like, issue a statement about what we're going to do if a tornado warning happens or whatever. And there was a tornado warning down in Albemarle. I don't think it ever really was anything, but it was radar indicated. And, just not something I've had to deal with in my 10 years of ministry during service. So that's interesting. One thing I'm not tired of is Duke beating UNC. Not tired of that at all. That's right. Thank you, Duke fans. I'm not tired of Duke winning. You're supposed to be wearing Duke stuff today, Randy. Not your money pants. St. Paddy's Day is tomorrow, so you wear money pants. I'm going to give Zach and Corey and Bernard another shout-out because they were here to midnight one night this week, putting up these TVs, taking the other TVs down, putting up that TV, making sure everything worked. They do a lot behind the scenes that you don't see, and Bernard's the only one that gets paid. So let's give them a round of applause for all that they do. They put in our speakers over here. These TVs were not easy. Of course, these mount in a different area than the other ones mounted, so the mount had to be moved down, and it was a whole complicated thing, and they didn't set the alarm till like 11:57 that night, so they were here late, which is just, I mean, it's not even their bedtime at 11:57, so wasn't too bad for them. We're going to continue our series today called Did Jesus Really Say That? And today, we're going to cover a phrase, and I'm going to let you finish it. I'll start it. You finish it if you know it. God helps those who help themselves. How many of you have heard that saying? Yep, ton of times. It's one of the most quoted phrases that is often, you would think it would be in the Bible, but it is not. It actually originated in ancient Greece. They had a saying or a proverb that said this, the gods help those who help themselves. Often, the modern way that it is put is attributed to Ben Franklin in the Poor Richer's Almanac in 1757. But we actually have traced it back to someone named Algernon Sidney in 1698 that says, God helps those who helps themselves. Either way, it has pagan or non-Christian roots, yet is often applied in a Christian setting or in the church. And basically what that saying means is that you need to be doing something. You need to be trying to help yourself rather than waiting for God to do something for you. And as is with most of these statements, there is some truth to that. We should not just sit around and wait for God to move on our behalf. We work with God. But, as with most statements, if taken too far, it can lead to a false view of God and how we are to live in a relationship with Him. But ultimately what I think this quote gets down to is something that we, at least I, have struggled to understand. How much of my life is determined by what I do? And how much is determined by what God does for me? Because if it's based off what I do, then I need to be doing everything I can to make my life successful. But if it's based off of what God does for me, then I just need to step back and wait for Him to move. The truth is, it is both. So then we come back to that statement. God helps those who help themselves. It sounds like a good balance. You need to be helping yourself, and God will come alongside of you. But here's the main problem with that statement. It sounds like you have to act first in order for God to help you. In other words, you have to help yourself before God kicks in. And that, if that is the case, if that's what this statement is saying, then it encourages self-reliance, self-effort, implying that God will assist only those who are actively trying to solve their own problems. So, let's look at Jesus' ministry and see if this is true. I pulled one story out here. I've got a few examples from Matthew 8, and then we're going to look at another story in the Gospel of John. But here in Luke 18, 35 through 37, let's see if Jesus waited for this guy to help himself. Verses 35 through 37 and 40 through 42. As Jesus approached Jericho, a blind man was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard the crowd going by, he asked what was happening. They told him, "Jesus of Nazareth is passing by." Verse 40. Jesus stopped, and he ordered the man to be brought to him. When he came near, Jesus asked him, "What do you want me to do for you?" He said, "Lord, I want to see." And Jesus said to him, "Receive your sight. Your faith has healed you." Jesus did not ask him, "What have you done to be well? Have you seen a doctor to make sure your blindness is not some other condition? Have you tried to give this money to this person to try to heal you? What have you done?" No, this man is blind. He can't get to Jesus without someone else helping him. And Jesus doesn't wait for them to bring him. Jesus tells him to come. "Bring that man over to me." Order that man to be brought to him. And then all he does is ask that man, "What do you want me to do for you?" And he said, "I want to see." In Matthew chapter 8, Jesus heals a man with leprosy. He heals a paralyzed man that could not make his way to Jesus. He heals Peter's mother-in-law, who didn't even ask to be healed. None of these did he ask, "Did you see a doctor? Have you been eating healthy? Have you done this? Have you done that?" He didn't ask for a tip from them before he did what he was doing. He didn't charge a fee. All he did was act on their behalf. So here's the truth. If God only helped those who helped themselves, then none of us would really receive help. Because the truth is, we are all helpless. Romans 5:6 says this: "When we were utterly helpless, Christ came at just the right time and died for us sinners." See, the truth is we need God's help to do anything in life. And this is not understood by a majority of the world, and I would say majority of people in the church. Theologically, which when I say theologically, that's the study of God. So in that circle, we call the help that he gives us grace. Grace is God's unmerited, unearned favor, kindness, and love. It's anything he does on our behalf. And the thing with grace is you can't earn it. You don't deserve it. He just gives it to us anyway. And he has done that for each one of us. And so I've got a timeline up here again. Timeline's going to represent our life. And even to have a timeline, we have to have what is called in the Wesleyan tradition common grace. It's not common in that it's not important. It's common in that everybody has it. That if you have breath in your lungs, you have received grace from God. If you have life, you have received grace from God. So let me ask you, what did you do to earn life? What did you do to help yourself get to that point? Nothing. It is God working on your behalf to knit you in your mother's womb so that you could have life. See, if God only helped those who helped themselves, we wouldn't exist in the first place. Let's say that halfway through our life or just whatever point, this is the point where we get saved. And the verse that we looked at in Romans is indicating, talking about salvation. So let's say at some point we get saved, that's that mark. Leading up to that point of getting saved, you can't make that decision without God's prevenient grace. And that's a big word, but just focus on this part right here. Prevenient grace. It is the grace that goes before. It is the grace that goes before salvation. So the reason why we need grace even to follow Jesus or to make this decision of coming to faith in him is because of the fall, because of Adam and Eve's sin. We are so messed up at our core that we're not going to want to make that decision. We're not going to want to follow God. And so we need God to free us up to make the decision to follow him. Now, what we would teach in our tradition is that God gives this grace to everyone as well. He gives the common grace. He gives the prevenient grace. He has given everyone the ability, the power to choose him, to choose to get saved, to choose to follow him. That is the grace that goes before. He has made that able. When you get saved, it's called justifying grace. And this is the grace that we sing about when we sing Amazing Grace, when most of our songs are talking about his justifying grace, the grace that washes away our sin, the grace that sets us free from sin, the grace that forgives everything we've ever done wrong. We didn't earn that. We don't deserve that, but God gave it to us. And then from there, for the rest of our life, there's what's called sanctifying grace. These two graces are received once you come to faith in Jesus, and that sanctifying grace is the grace that he gives us in order to live the life that he has called us to live, in order to be Christ-like. So these two, everybody has received. They lead into making this decision. If you make this decision, you receive that grace in order to live the life that God has called us to live. The truth is, you wouldn't even have a timeline, you wouldn't able to be saved, you wouldn't have your sins wiped away, and you wouldn't be able to live a Christ-like life without God working on your behalf first. Because you are so messed up. I am so messed up. Humanity is so messed up because of sin, so corrupted because of sin, that we can't move unless God moves first. And if you are here today, God has moved first. If you are saved, God moved first. And then you experience God's move in your life so that you can follow him. God has moved on your behalf. So the saying that God helps those who help themselves is completely wrong. Because we can't help ourselves without God's help first. And so my main point for you is simply this, four words. God helps the helpless. God doesn't help those who help themselves. He helps the helpless. The truth is God helps everyone. Those that get prideful, they just don't realize that they are helpless. Those that get prideful are people who just don't remember that they need help. Are just people who don't realize it. There's people, tons of people, millions of people in the world today who do not realize that God has given them grace, what we would call the common grace, in order to live life. But this is why when we see someone, let's say we see someone we disagree with, that's living just a sinful life, they're saying mean things, you know what? God loves them so much that he has shown his unmerited favor and kindness to them by giving them life. That's why you should treat everybody as you want to be treated. That's why you should value that everybody is created in the image of God. That's why we should love those that even the world tends to hate. They have received this common grace. God has already moved on their behalf. But here's something this is where I think my message for you today is really applicable. God especially helps those that know they need his help. And that's not because he shows them extra favor. I don't mean that he, like if you say I need help, he's going to be like, oh, I'm going to give you 100 plus favor, you know. No, it's more that we are open to his help if we know we need it. We are open to the help. We understand that he's offering it to everyone. Both of these, he's offering to everyone. And so he's offering it to everyone, but it's up to you how much you receive it. So if you receive the prevenient grace to make the decision to follow Jesus, then you'll receive the justifying grace and the sanctifying grace in your life. But you have to be open to receiving it. Now, this is true for salvation, which is what these last two kind of cover. But this is also true for health problems. This is true for any type of conflict, relational conflict we have with other people. This is true for spiritual problems. This is true for discovering your life's purpose or direction in life. Whatever it is, God wants to help you, but you have to be open to it. How often have we not been open to it? Because we are so focused on helping ourselves. I can speak from experience here. I've experienced this specifically with leading the church. So often I'll do what I think we should do without ever asking for God's help. So often in my life, I'll make the decision on what I think needs to happen, what I think I need to say to that person, what I think I need to do to overcome whatever sin without ever asking God for his help or for his direction. See, sometimes I think we can get so focused on helping ourselves that we miss the help that God is offering. And to show you this, I've got a story in John chapter 5 I want to read to you. John chapter 5 is a story you may be familiar with, but it's the man that's at the pool. There's this pool there, and this pool would, the water would stir up every now and then. And we don't know exactly why or what was happening. We don't know if it was like a spring that maybe sprung up, and we don't know if it was demonic in some way. We don't know what was really happening there. But this pool would stir up, and somewhere along the line, someone said that if you get in the pool, when the water gets stirred up, you will be healed of whatever disease you have, whatever problem you have. And so what happened is a bunch of people that had chronic illnesses gathered around that pool, just waiting for the water to move. And as soon as the water would move, they would all rush to get in it because they all would rush to be healed. And so Jesus comes onto the scene. He comes to this pool, and starting in verse 5 of John 5, it says, one who was there had been invalid for 38 years. Other words, he was paralyzed for 38 years. We don't know how old this man is, but I think it's safe to say majority of his life, if not all of his life. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, do you want to get well? In other words, do you want my help? Sir, the invalid replied, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me. Now, do you see what happened there? Jesus says, do you want to get well? In other words, do you want my help? And this man says, hey, I can't get to the pool. Everyone else gets there before me. And Jesus, I'm thinking Jesus is like, no, you didn't hear me. Do you want to get well? I didn't ask you if you want to go get in this pool that really can't heal you. I'm not asking you if you think you should be doing what you think you should be doing. I asked you, do you want my help? Do you want to get well? How often do we do the exact same thing? He says, do you want my help? And we say, yeah, I do. And then we apply for every job out there rather than asking him which job we should apply for. Or we say, yeah, I want your help. And then we just speak our mind the next time we argue with that person or that issue comes up. God asks, do you want my help? And we said, yeah, I do. So here's what I'm going to do at my job. I'm going to go to my boss on Monday, and I'm going to explain to them what's going on, and they need to fix it, or I'm leaving. Or how about this one? Yeah, I do. I want to beat this addiction. So I'm going to take this plan that I have come up with in my head to help me wean off of it, and I'll quit later. What's wrong with all of those? You're missing the one who is offering help. You're not taking into account the help that God is offering. You're not seeking his help, asking him what you should do, even when he is offering it. This man missed it. And so Jesus, it's a simple answer to him. Thankfully, Jesus showed this guy grace, even though he missed. See, he was focused on what he thought could heal him, and he missed the healer. He thought he was doing what he thought would help him, and he totally missed the helper. We do the same thing. So Jesus responds to him in verses 8 and 9, get up, pick up your mat, and walk. And at once, the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. See, the pool couldn't do for this man what Jesus could. But his focus wasn't in the right area, yet Jesus acted on his behalf anyway. Aren't you thankful for all the times that Jesus has acted on your behalf anyway when you didn't seek his help? I know I am. When I was trying to figure out what to do with my life, you've heard the story before that I was thinking about being a math teacher. That was kind of what I was wanting to do. That was probably the time in which I sought God's guidance the most. And the thing about God giving his guidance and his help, sometimes he wants you to know just how helpless you are before he'll give it to you. And so I remember being on my knees when I was supposed to be asleep at my parents' house, being on my knees, just praying, asking for his guidance, asking for his direction in my life. What do you want me to do? Do you want me to be a teacher, or do you want me to go in the ministry? And it was one day going to Food Lion, going to work. It was on, I can think of the road, it meets 13. No, it's up from there, near Union Grove Christian Church. Huh? Did Kristen say something? Yeah, there's two of them. Not the Baptist one, the Christian one. Yeah. Woodfern. It was Woodfern Road, right there on the straight stretch through those chicken houses. I was in my black truck, and the Holy Spirit just came over me. And I started crying, and I don't even hardly remember the drive from there. But I knew at that point God was confirming that I was called into ministry. I knew that he was calling me into that for my life. And for me, I needed that confirmation in order to take that step, because that was a big step. You've heard me say pastoring doesn't pay much. Pastoring's not easy. It's not the easiest job in the world. You're on call 24/7, essentially. There's some good things about it. Obviously, I love seeing people's lives change here on earth, but ultimately affecting those lives for eternity. But we're all called to do that. It doesn't take a pastor to do that. We're all called to do that. But I asked for God's help the most at that point that I ever have in my life. And it took a while for me to receive it, but I did. And I'm so, so grateful looking back at that. There's also been times in my life where I have not asked God for his help. Often, in struggles with sin, I would come up with my own plan on what I need to do to overcome whatever sin it was. And if you want to make God laugh, come up with a plan. And guess what? My plans would fail just about every single time. I tried what I thought I needed to do, when really what I needed to do was to ask God for help and to get on my knees again, to beg him for his help. So let me ask you three questions. This is the three application questions. These are the three things I want you to take away. The first question is this: do you know you need God's help? Do you know you need God's help? Do you realize just how helpless you are? Do you realize just how much you needed God's grace, even to get saved, to live a holy life, to be set free from sin? Do you realize that you need God's grace to live, to breathe this next breath, that you have been a recipient of God's grace? And no matter what it is, whether it's sin, trying to figure out direction in life, trying to overcome relational issues, whatever problem you're facing, you need God's help. Do you know that? I was watching a sermon, and he was addressing this, and he had a really good illustration. And I meant to get the video, and I forgot. But have you ever seen that video of the guy that's out on the beach, and he's mopping the ocean, trying to get all the water up? He gave the example of that and said, that's what it's like when you're trying to fix your own problems. You can just keep mopping, but there's going to keep being water. The water's going to keep coming. The water's going to keep being there. And isn't that true? That when we try to fix our own problems, another problem pops up. And you know why? Because you're trying to fix it, and you're the one who creates the problems often. So you're just making mistake after mistake, mistake. I've said this, I think we said this on Tuesday morning table gathering, or somewhere, I don't remember where, but sometimes I think God allows us to struggle in our life, whether it be with sin or some other problem. Not that he wants us to sin, but he allows us to struggle with it so that we remember just how helpless we are. So that we remember how powerless we are, so that we remember this truth: you need God's help. Do you know you need God's help? Number two, the second question is, how desperate are you for God's help? Do you want just a little help? Do you just want, you know, to live the good life and want him to make everything easy for you? Or do you want his help really, really bad? We aren't very desperate, I think, because we have a whole lot in our world, in the American culture, to distract us, to numb us. We have Facebook and TikTok to scroll through so that we just mindlessly scroll and try to forget our problems. We have Netflix and Hulu and Paramount Plus and Peacock and all the different streaming platforms to turn on. We have Duke and Carolina games to watch Duke beat Carolina time and time again. I got two in there for you, Felicia. She told me I had to mention it today. We have all this to numb us, not counting substances to numb us, from realizing just how helpless we are and how desperate we are for God's help. But if we were forced to not be numbed by all the entertainment and substances in the world, I think we would be more desperate. I think that the altars would be full on Sunday morning asking God to help. I think our Monday night prayer group would have more than two people showing up because they are desperate for God to help whatever it is they need him to help with. So let me ask you, how desperate are you? Have you settled for something in your life that shouldn't be there? Have you settled for whatever your life looks at? Have you just thought, maybe I can just say a little prayer at night? No, you got to show that you're desperate at times. So how desperate are you for God's help? Sometimes I think God allows our struggles to get worse so that we become more desperate. He allows us to experience the fullness of some of our issues. Third, so how desperate are you? Do you know you need God's help? Third, what do you do to seek his help? What do you do? Do you watch Netflix? That's not going to help you. Do you drink or smoke? That's not going to help you. What do you do? You should be praying. You should be reading his word. You should be asking good Christian friends, asking people in the church for their advice. You should be asking him before you do or make any major decision. And then this is where the part of you helping comes in. When he tells you to do something, do it. You can help then. You don't have to help before. God is moving on your behalf. He's given you the grace. He wants you to seek him. So that's the part that you can do. Not that you have to go out and do whatever. You need to seek him, seek his help, and then whatever he tells you to do, do it. And I think that's where that saying probably came from. God helps those who help themselves. You know, in other words, don't just be asking God to do something, give me money, and then don't go get a job. You know, like, I think that's where the saying come from. But if you're asking God for money, if it's his will, sometimes he has a different plan. And we're going to talk about one of those stories here at the end today. But if it is his plan, his will, then he will tell you, you probably need to go get a job. And then you can ask him, what job should I go get? And then he'll tell you which job you should go get rather than applying for all of them. Do you act based off what he tells you to do? So if you really want to help yourself, you need to seek God's help. I know for me, I don't trust myself to help myself. Does that make sense? I don't trust myself to help myself. Because if I do what I think I should do, I'm probably going to make a mess of it. I need his guidance in order to know what I need to do to try to help myself. And during our lifetime, I can think of two instances here in the last, 25 years, where people really seem to seek God's help. 9/11, I was young, but I know that people said the churches were full after 9/11. I know they have the National Prayer Service with Billy Graham leading it. I've actually watched that. People were seeking God's help because they realized just how helpless they were, that they don't have much control over the airplane, when they don't have much control over whether a hijacker gets in there. They don't have much control over anything that happens in this world. And so 9/11, we realized just how helpless we are, and people sought God in prayer. Same sort of thing kind of happened during COVID. I know that it was different because we were not able to go into churches, but you know, some of the numbers indicating the health of Christianity in America have actually went up since COVID. People are reading their Bible more. People are going to church more. We think it's actually stabilized how many Christians are in America rather than being in constant decline. I think that's because they realize that we don't have much control over illness. You can do everything you can to try to prevent getting it, but you can get it no matter what. So you just need to seek God's help and make sure your life with God is correct, is right, just in case you did pass away. There's been other people who've, you know, maybe lost a job, had a really bad illness. Sometimes it takes something really, really bad for us to seek God's help. But here's my point for you today. Let's seek God's help before the bad thing happens. Let's stop waiting for us to hit rock bottom before we seek his help. Let's search for his help in anything and everything. I'm going to share a story from church history. I love sharing stories of Christians who have gone before us. And this is the story of a man named George Mueller. I'm assuming I'm pronouncing it correctly. He was a 19th century German evangelist. Did you get a picture? Yeah, there he is. Nice looking man. 19th century German evangelist and missionary. He founded several orphanages, specifically one called the Ashley Down Orphanage in Bristol, England. This man cared for over 1,000 children. What he realized was that the orphanages were requiring people, the kids, or the families to pay. And so he decided to create the orphanage where they didn't have to pay. And so he's specifically looking for ones that didn't have a mother or father. I think some of the other ones was a little bit different from orphanages today. It was if this one family member was out. But he decided to reach these children. And so he created these orphanages. He also started 117 schools, educating over 120,000 children. However, he faced significant financial challenges in supporting these orphanages. And so one morning, this happened often, they were without food. So one morning, they were out food, and he got the children together to pray. They didn't have money to buy anything. They were going to be hungry that day. So him and the children, they gathered together to pray, and they trusted that God would provide. And as soon as they finished praying, guess what broke down outside of the orphanage? A milk truck. They were not able to get the milk, so rather than the milk spoiling, he said, I'm going to donate all this milk to the orphanage. Guess who else showed up? A baker. Had a large quantity of bread that he wanted to provide to the orphanage. This happened time and time and time again. This man did not ask for donations. He did not advertise his needs. Instead, he prayed that God would provide for the orphans in his care. And his reliance was solely on God's provision. And time again, God answered his prayers, providing food, clothing, and financial support. He kept a detailed record of every time God answered one of his prayers. And he documented over 50,000 specific answers to prayer. He was able to minister to 10,000 orphans. What was the number for how many? And school children, 120,000 children, and he relied on God. He knew just how helpless he was. He knew he needed God's help, and he sought God's help, and God provided the help. This is not a point for you, but I thought it might be good to mention here. God helps the helpless help the helpless. So when God helps you, you're supposed to help someone else. That's what happened to this man. He asked for God's help. God provided him with everything he needed to do what God has called him to do. And think about all those children that were changed because of this guy's ministry. Let me ask you today, what do you need God's help with? As the worship team comes up, we're going to sing one last song, and the song is Run to the Father. Because those questions that I asked you was, number one, do you know you need God's help? And I hope that you listen to what I taught today and realize you do need God's help. Number two, how desperate are you for it? Are you fine with just kind of how life is right now? Do you just going to seek it a little bit now and then? Or do you want his help really, really bad? Whether it be with a sin, whether it be with some type of direction in your life, whatever problem you're facing, whatever it is, how desperate are you for his help? And then third, what do you do to seek it? And everything that has to do with seeking his help involves running to the Father. Seeking his guidance, seeking his love, seeking his mercy, seeking his grace. The grace that he gives all of us, the grace that leads to salvation, the justifying grace, or the sanctifying grace. The grace that we need in order to live life. So I want you to stand to your feet, and I want us to pray together, and then I'm going to invite you to respond.